Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big Deion, man. That may be the steal of the draft. I don't know, right? But it could be, man. The kid is a unicorn. The young man, in terms of his size, his athleticism, right? His ability, football intelligence, man, sees the game very well. Another one that kind of fought through some things, had some adversity. And I think it was good for him to go through that. And I think it'll make him a better player on the back half of his career.
Kentucky's defensive coordinator on Deion Walker there, Bill's fourth-round pick. Traded up to 109 to grab the big man who had a back injury, had a reproductive 2023. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR on a overcast Friday. It's going to rain a bit this weekend, dodging rain in and out. We're going to get to Sam Monson, who joins us on the Western Hotline. Chat a bit about this Bills draft, what they got, and how things look. And Sam Monson on the Western Hotline, he of the Check the Mic podcast with Steve Palazzolo. Sam, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. How are you today?
Doing well. How about you guys?
We're all right. It's been a busy week here in Buffalo talking about this draft. And, the Bills, of course, have sky-high expectations, as is normally the case, and focus their draft efforts, on rebuilding a defense and more specifically on overhauling their front seven with a lot of new faces in here.
Yeah, they did. That was clearly an area that they targeted, and I think they got pretty good value doing that through the mid rounds as well. So it was clearly an area that they were intent on going after, but I think that the value matched up, which doesn't always happen in the draft.
Which pick did you like the most? I mean, we can start Maxwell Harrison in the first round, TJ Sanders in the second, Landon Jackson. I feel like that's a big name people are focusing in on because Jackson had thought to be maybe a early second-round guy, and the Bills get him in the third.
Yeah, I think that would probably be my favorite for that reason. Landon Jackson's he's an intriguing player. I mean, he gave a lot of very good players major problems. The game against Will Campbell, the LSU offensive tackle who just, went to the Patriots, that was one of the worst games on Will Campbell's tape. Landon Jackson gave him real problems and arguably sort of exposed better than anybody the lack of length and the lack of wingspan that Will Campbell brings to the table. Obviously, those are traits that Landon Jackson has at his size and was able to use them definitively and extremely well against Will Campbell. I think Landon Jackson could be a better player in the NFL than he was in college as well. I think that they didn't necessarily play to his strengths as well as they could at Arkansas. They almost kind of looked at his size and went, well, you're more of a power rusher. You're going to play inside, But actually, if you watch a lot of his wins, his best work came threatening the edge. And he showed with the pre-combine process, the athleticism is there as well. Like, he's not just a big, slow, lumbering type of power player. He's a guy that has got the speed and dynamism and explosiveness to threaten the edge. And I think he's got the moves to do it as well. So I kind of think that if Landon Jackson gets turned loose a little bit by a defensive line coach, he can be even more effective.
Yeah, does it feel like the only reason he maybe fell, unless you think there's something else, why he kind of fell to the third round is just that he's super stiff and some people think maybe that doesn't translate to the NFL?
Yeah, exactly. I think there were a couple of sort of little concerns. The stiffness definitely won. I think the overall production wasn't spectacular as well. Like, this was a strange edge rusher group where every single one of the top guys, once you got beyond Abdul Carter, seemed to have some kind of red flag, like something to be scared of, whether it's lack of production, whether it's off field, whether it's attitude. Like, everybody had something. that was causing you to at least second guess yourself. Lannon Jackson, like, everything is pretty spectacular except the short shuttle in terms of athleticism. Like, and that's obviously a kind of change of direction metric, but the three cone was good. So I think he may have trouble stop-start change of direction, but I think he's actually got the bend to be able to attack the edge and get around the corner.
What about the Hairston pick in round one? And if he is a player that is able to produce and play for the Bills right away, fastest combine, fastest 40 at the combine, smaller, but, you know, in theory, you would hope he could give them a man coverage ability that they didn't have last year. I guess if he hits as a pick, even in year one, what do you think he could provide to the Bills defense that would help in a playoff game and, you know, situations that maybe didn't have a guy like that?
Yeah, well, I think he's not scheme specific. I think he can play in man or zone. When I was watching his tape, there were a couple of early sort of blown coverages in cover three last year that made me worried and thinking maybe he is just a kind of man cover corner only. But the more the season went on, I think he does have a good feel for zone coverage. He makes some really nice breaks on the ball in a pick six against Ohio State. There was a really nice pass where he kind of came off one threat, broke on the second one, took it to the house. I think he works for any scheme and actually is a guy that lets you change the scheme week to week. You know, you can play man coverage against a particular team. You can play heavy zone the next week, and he still fits into the defense. That elite speed you talked about, he not only was he the fastest 40 time at the combine for corners, but it was the fastest sort of miles per hour figure that anybody hit as well when you start looking at the tracking data stuff. And it shows up on tape. I mean, he sometimes, you know, these 40 times, you can't necessarily see the speed when they're playing. His speed is visible all the time when you're watching him play. There were games against, or there was plays against Texas where those guys were able to get separation and beat him deep, but he chewed it back up. Like, he was able to make up that gap with closing speed when the ball's in the air. He's got really good jumping skills as well. Like, he can elevate at the catch point and swat away a pass, 39.5-inch vertical, but he also seems to have hang time with that. He can get up and stay there. I think he's got all the tools to be a really good high-end cornerback. There's still, I think, some little technique things that need to be cleaned up, but I think he's got the potential to be a really good corner.
Sam Monson joining us on the Whistler Hotline. Sam, one thing about the draft that's always kind of fun and a piece of it is that different teams have different schemes and needs and what they might want in a player. And this was a big conversation on here, the one technique player for the Bills. We kind of wondered if they would go that direction. And ultimately, they really didn't. Even the big guy they got in the fourth round is not thought to be that kind of player. It kind of gets to conceptually pass and stop the pass, which is something we've seen from these Bills. And, you know, as we look at their defense and how they built it out through this draft and through free agency, it looks like a defensive line that wants to disrupt the pass game and athletic corners that are going to try and shut teams down in the pass game and lean on that strength, which is what they've been built on for almost a decade at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is going to be attacking defense. You know, one technique's the nose tackle position. It's gone under a kind of significant overhaul in the NFL in the last, like, 25 years. You know, we think of old school 3-4 nose tackles like Ted Washington, these, you know, monstrous guys that did not necessarily have the incredible movement skills, and they were just there to occupy space and occupy blockers and chew up two gaps. People don't really play that way anymore at all, really. So nose tackles have become slightly different players, and maybe there's still the occasion where you ask them to do a little bit more than one gap, a kind of gap and a half type of a attacking defense, but generally they're expected to be mobile. They're expected to fill a gap to attack a blocker at the point. And as long as everybody is capable of doing that, you have gap sound defense. So I think there's been this move away from multiple gapping big body defensive linemen towards a kind of collective approach to defending the run. Now, maybe that's going to swing back as teams try and use more too high coverage shells and you're taking a guy out of the box and you need to make up that gap somewhere. But for the moment, I think every defense effectively is happy to defend the run with sort of individual gap defense. But you still need the players that can do that. You still need the players that can win one-on-one against an offensive lineman or against a blocker. And I think that's what the Bills have been trying to upgrade.
Yeah, Sam Monson of Check the Mic podcast with Steve Palazzolo. On that, like, hearing you talk about the attacking defense and some of the skill sets that Hairston provides. Like last year, Sam, the Bills were, I mean, they were great on first and second down. Fourth in EPA per play on defense on first and second down, but they're 29th on third down. Like they just couldn't get teams off the field. And trying to think about what they were last year versus this year and hearing you talk about it, I mean, is that one area you would expect them to just naturally be better because of the additions that they've made?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've really beefed up the defensive front, the defensive line. That's going to help across the board. And then it's going to depend sort of how quickly Hairston becomes a really good player. And that can take some time for young cornerbacks. It's not always hitting the ground running and becoming a really good player right out of the gate. It might take them a while to do that. But the defensive front being improved will help the back end as well. You know, it's a symbiotic relationship with pass rush and coverage. The better your pass rush, the better your defensive front, the less time those guys have to cover on the back end, the easier their job is. So I think overall this is a draft that will help that area.
Sam Monson on the Wester Hotline. Sam, one thing about this Bills team that they are counting on, and they probably could be reasonably doing this, is the offense basically doing it again. They swapped out two receivers and two guys have come in. Josh Palmer and Elijah Moore in, Amari Cooper and Mac Hollins out. But Brandon Bean is, of course, bullish on the idea that this offense can do what it did last year with Joe Brady and Josh Allen running the show. And I think there's a lot of reason to believe that they can do it again.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, you know, the Bills are one of a few teams in the NFL who fall into the category of your baseline is exceptionally high because you start off with Josh Allen, right? You know, same with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, same with the Bengals and Joe Burrow. Generally speaking, if those guys stay healthy for the season and if there's anything around them, the baseline is going to be extremely productive and extremely imposing. And the players that left from Buffalo in terms of those receivers, they're not guys that you can't replace. They're not guys that you would expect to have a massive swing, you know, whereas if Cincinnati lost Jamar Chase, you know, that would have a massive impact on what you expect that offense to do. So yeah, you would expect, I think, this team to come in and Josh Allen to execute the offense and this offense to still remain incredibly productive.
How do you see how they treat that position and how they prioritize it, invest in it? Since they trade Diggs away, there's a couple of mid-level free agent contracts, Coleman. To you, like, are there clear teams that, like Tampa picking Igbuka this past year, where you look at them and go, that team clearly is going all out for receiver all the time, and there might be other teams like the Bills that, you know, might treat it more on par with other positions?
I don't have a problem with their level of investment in the receiving position. And I tend to think of it like if you look at the offense as a whole or sort of skill position players, receivers as a bracket term, because, you know, Dalton Kincaid needs to be into that equation as well. Even Dawson Knox, and they have a lot of players that tick the bucket of being receivers, even if they're not technically wide receivers. What confuses me about their approach to it is like a steadfast refusal to target any kind of X wide receiver. That specific position designation within the receiver skill set. It's almost like they were scarred so much by Stephon Diggs. It's like, we're never going to get an X receiver again. We're going to instead target a bunch of Z receivers and slot receivers and tight ends and everything but an X. And that's fine. It's working. It's not like you can criticize them and say, look, this is a critical flaw within this offense. It's going to be the reason they don't win Super Bowls. But it is a missing skill set within this offense. Like, they don't have anybody that can do the things that Stephon Diggs did at his peak within this offense. When they drafted Keon Coleman in the first round, at that bottom of the first round, top of the second area, like, he didn't fit that mold. And people sort of, he was a polarizing draft prospect because he wasn't that clear-cut X receiver skill set, and that always creates the issue of, like, well, what is that guy's value if you have a different role for him? And as soon as he was drafted by Buffalo, it kind of raised alarm bells a little bit because people were like, well, that's not exactly where he should play. And immediately they kind of came out and said, yeah, he's going to play that X receiver role. I think he's still a good receiver. This is not a knock on Keon Coleman, but I think his rookie season has already kind of shown that he does not really belong in that specific role. So it's just an interesting approach that they have either just not found one of those guys that they really like and instead just keep adding, you know, players that they like that don't have that skill set or are deliberately ignoring that specific skill set. But the lack of X receiver within this offense is confusing to me.
Sam Monson on the Western Hotline chatting with us. Sam, how about the rest of the – let's check AFC, because one of the things about the draft is it's every team's opportunity to kind of chart the course of their future, and the Bills are trying to just, you know, get over that final hurdle or two. Which team maybe also in that bucket do you like? You know, you want to conclude the contenders here. Cincinnati, who missed the playoffs. Jacksonville, who kind of starts from the bottom after a bad year. Baltimore, who's, you know, final hurdle. Who in the AFC did you really like their draft?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, from Buffalo's point of view, Kansas City might have had the best draft in the NFL. I love their draft pretty much start to finish. I think they got extremely good value with almost every pick. The picks that didn't necessarily represent good value, I still think were excellent players. So, you know, they did a similar job to Buffalo in terms of beefing up their defensive line. They added corner depth. They got a steal in a guy like Jalen Royals, the wide receiver from Utah State in the fourth round. And even, you know, even in the seventh round, a guy like Rashad Smith, I mean, he's going to be labeled as a, you know, a situational scat back, a receiving third down type of back because he's a recent wide receiver convert. But I actually think he could be much more than that based off his tape. He's got really impressive ability actually to run inside and run between the tackles. He's sort of still learning that part of the game because he's still so new at it, but it wouldn't shock me if he ended up being a surprise useful contributing player as a seventh round pick. So yeah, I think Kansas City had a really good draft, and they kind of needed one. Like, this was not a draft that they could have afforded to have a really kind of terrible distribution of picks.
Yeah, definitely not something Bills fans want to hear. I think it added to that theme. I heard you on your show either earlier in the week or last talk about the New England you think had a good draft too?
Yeah, I mean, I think New England have had a really good offseason. Now, obviously, they're coming from a much lower starting point than Buffalo or Kansas City. But when you factor in free agency was interesting because they brought in a bunch of good players that weren't at the positions of need that they had. Obviously, arguably still the worst offensive line and the worst wide receiver room in the NFL heading into the offseason, and they didn't really attack that too hard in free agency. Instead, the money went towards guys like Milton Williams on the defensive line, but they needed those as well. I mean, this was just a bad football team. That's why they were picking where they were in the draft. But so that kind of boxed them into a corner a little bit going into the draft. They needed to attack specific needs, and I think that's how you end up drafting a guy like Will Campbell fourth overall. Will Campbell's a really good player, but between the arm length, the wingspan, and his tape is good, but it's not great. It's not as clean as a guy like Joe Alt from a couple of years ago. You know, you still end up drafting him a four overall because they just had to make that pick. But once you get beyond that, Travion Henderson is a good player and a massive upgrade. If just as a pass-protecting running back, like a blitz pickup artist, that guy's phenomenal. Kyle Williams in the third round, I think, is a steal at receiver. Jared Wilson later on in that third round, I think he could end up starting for them as well in the offensive line. And then even later on in the draft, they kept going with the defensive line as well. Braden Swinson in the fifth round from LSU has the potential to be an absolute steal. There's a reason he fell to the fifth round. Like, he butted heads with coaches at LSU, and there's some sort of, you know, attitude question marks because of that. But on the field, that guy has sort of similar tape to Landon Jackson in terms of where he belongs. You know, early day two, maybe even he could sneak into the end of the first round based off his tape. So if they're able to keep him together and he's a good sort of fit culturally, the fifth round could be a complete steal for him.
Sam, what do you make of Travis Hunter?
Travis, I mean, he's a unique player. Like, it's difficult to overstate. I mean, we have to keep reinforcing it. Like, the problem with the draft is it's oversaturation. We hear the same thing over and over and over again, and everyone's kind of sick of it by now. But we can't, like, overlook just how freaky it is for a guy to be playing, you know, top five, top 10, wherever you want to put the line, but it's top 10 somewhere. The top 10 wide receiver and cornerback in the country at the same time, playing both ways, playing 100-plus snaps a game, this is all ridiculous. Like, this has never happened for decades, going back to, you know, the time when everybody was a two-way player. But, like, even guys that we think of, you know, Champ Bailey and Chris Gamble and all those guys, Charles Woodson, they didn't do that. They played a package or a small group of plays on the other side of the ball. They didn't play every single down effectively both sides, and that's what Travis Hunter was doing. And he was the best player on either side of the ball for Colorado and one of the best in the country. So that is basically unprecedented, certainly unprecedented in the modern era. It is utterly ridiculous. And if he's able to keep doing that at the NFL level, the value proposition that that brings is off the charts as well. I mean, he could become the only player outside of the quarterback position to start getting close to a quarterback's value, because he could theoretically provide the value of two different players at the same time. Now, we don't know if he's going to be able to keep doing that at the NFL. There are guys that are exceptional college players that aren't able to do the same thing at the NFL level, just playing one side of the ball. So who knows what his future will actually look like. But it's why I think you can't treat him the way, you know, normal players are treated. So Jacksonville gave up a lot to go get him. And while I probably wouldn't have made that move, you know, I'd be too scared of the risk associated, and I would kind of bank on the idea that three players will probably end up being better than the one Travis Hunter most of the time. I understand the gamble. I mean, the potential payoff, if Travis Hunter is able to keep doing in the NFL what he was doing in college, is astronomical.
Sam Monson of the Check the Mic podcast with Steve Palazzolo. Sam, thanks very much for the time.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
All right. Sam Monson, love the work he does. He and Steve Palazzolo there. Again, the Check the Mic podcast. One thing I was thinking about Travis Hunter for your dynasty conversations.
Mm-hmm.
He might be one of the best receivers in football, but dynasty is not about talent. Dynasty is about usage.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. All fantasy football is about usage. This is fantasy football. It's about usage. And
yeah,
will he get the targets? And beyond that, his injury risk would have to be considered to be significantly higher than any other fantasy football player you have. Would it not?
Yes.
You are playing.
He's playing more.
You are tackling people. You are playing defense.
Right.
You are hitting people. And if you draft, you're a toss-up. Tet McMillan or Travis Hunter. You might say Travis Hunter's a better player and is going to get 50 more points projected in a year, 150 more points, but what's his injury risk? To me, that'd be the thing, the only thing that would make me think, ooh, what do we do here? Let's get a caller in here. Teddy in Chicago. Hey, Teddy, what's up?
Hi there. Me and my dad love the show, and you already know we're representing Bills Mafia out here in Chicago, and we're in the car right now, and I just want to ask you, what do you think our biggest room for improvement is on our defense after the draft?
You mean positionally?
Like what they have left to do?
Or what they have to do like in practice?
I'd say positionally. Personally, I think the safeties need a little help. Maybe they can move a cornerback that we have now, or like, because we have a few now. We have a few cornerbacks now, so maybe they'll move one to safety.
Thanks, Teddy.
Yeah.
To that. All right, so I think safety is the answer. I mean, at edge, they have enough bodies. Hopefully they can get good play out of their edge.
Yeah.
Defensive tackle, they still might be a little light there.
Yeah, like,
let's see what
on paper they could still use another big body one tech guy, but the numbers now are like, who are you cutting for that guy? You cutting Dwayne Carter to go sign off the street a 330-pound nose tackle? Sam just talked about how that's kind of been obsolete. So
wouldn't the answer be that you're more likely to cut one of these edges because you have too many guys? That's the thing about this. Yeah. They've got 6 weeks to figure this out because of the suspensions to Ogunjobi. I forgot about Ogunjobi.
Ogunjobi.
Yeah.
I think they're done on the defensive line.
Yeah. Safety is probably it for me. Safety is a position that when we got into the draft week, I made the case and I would have absolutely supported the idea of Malachi Starks, would have totally supported that.
Let's play the game this way. A star player becomes available, demands a trade tomorrow at position blank. Where are we thinking? Where would we be arguing the Bills should go after that guy?
Defensively?
If it was a safety, I think we would be, wouldn't we?
Yep.
A star safety becomes available tomorrow.
Yep.
We're talking about going and getting that guy. A star linebacker becomes available tomorrow.
Probably not.
Star corner? Probably not.
Corner's almost definitely no.
And then
edge is almost an always yes.
I feel
that position, it's an always yes.
No matter what you have.
Pretty much.
Always yes at edge.
So edge and safety.
Yeah.
A star player tomorrow becomes available. I think those are the two positions you would say, yeah, they should go get that.
Yeah. 803-0550. Thanks, Teddy, for the phone call. And, you know, on the other part of it, I guess the, you know, there's the position, then there's in practice. In practice, what do they have to do? Force more punts.
Get off the field on third downs. Yeah.
Force more punts.
Yep.
Turnovers, not exactly sustainable. Forcing punts, that is something that year over year, if you're really good defensively, you know, get the ball back for your offense. Punts are turnovers. So force more punts. Get off the field. 803-0550. The revamped front seven that is among Bills fans, I think, you know, despite the conversation and what might be suggested for the next few months, this revamped front seven comes as one of the better ideas. I think we came into the offseason thinking they're going to remake their front four, front seven to a degree. I guess it really is front four. I mean, the only reason I say seven is because of what Michael Hoyt brings. Like, he's like that piece they can move different places. But yeah, revamping the front four makes a lot of sense. Pretty much everybody supported it going into the offseason and still does. You can give us a ring if you want. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. It is, of course, Derby weekend, Kentucky Oaks today as well, so horse racing season is upon us. It began before this, but, you know, the big stage on NBC, all that, and at Batavia Downs as well. We've got going out this weekend on Saturday from 2 to 5, Brian Kozy will be live from Batavia Downs. So that's 2 to 5 tomorrow here on WGR, special edition of Sports Talk Saturday for the Kentucky Derby. And joining us on the Western Hotline is Nick the Railbird to talk to us about the picks, the horses, the bets, what we're going to do. Nick, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Happy Kentucky Oaks Day.
Hey, happy Oaks Day. And good to talk to you guys. Getting ready for the big race. And Mother Nature, I think, is going to play a little havoc with us.
Yeah, you think so?
Havoc?
Havoc today, tomorrow, the whole weekend? What are we looking at?
Yeah, we're looking at today, thunder showers, and it's going to rain tonight. And it looks like it's going to rain right till about 4. Some thunderstorms tomorrow. So I think it's a high probability of off track. And whether it's good, sloppy, or muddy, as anybody's guess.
All right. So how good is it at accepting rain? And, I mean, I almost want to ask this, like, about a football field as well, because it's not just that it rains, it's just how many races go on that dirt before the Derby actually runs. So how will that all factor in?
Yeah, you know, they groom it with trucks and rakes in between races. But, you know, what happens, it's very important for, you know, especially the serious handicappers, you know, what part of that track. The jockeys will get used to know whether the track, sometimes it gets real deep and the water drains to the inside. And then they'll know that before the big race. And then if you see certain, you know, horses that go in the middle of the racetrack or go wider, they've probably found a spot that they know is a little bit firmer and not as deep, you know, running in sand or running in mud. You know how that is as a person, just as difficult for a horse. So you got to keep your eyes open. You're going to see some different type of racing, I think, in the Derby if this rain comes to fruition.
Nick, if this is a dumb question, I'm prepared for it, but do some horses do better in mud because of experience, or is it because of, hold on, mindset, training? You know, is it just that some don't like it? How do you get through all this? By the time they're this old, do you know who's good and who's not?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Believe it or not, pedigree comes into play. Some horses, they're actually bred, and there are ratings, and which we'll talk about a little bit. And go by the experience. Remember, these are babies. They're 3 years old. And some horses, when you have a really good, expensive three-year-old, if it's an off-track going up to the Derby, you don't want to risk injury. You will for the $5 million purse, not that they want to get hurt. But if your horse has never been experienced on the off-track, I kind of, you know, raises my concern. And journalism, the probable favorite, has never been on an off-track.
All right. So this might be an opportunity to avoid the favorite?
Yes. And you've read my mind very well. I'll just jump in a little bit on it. I'm going to base this, if there's a very high probability it's going to be not a fast track. And to that point, I said this even on a fast track, it's not a question of if, it's when a Japanese raced horse is going to win. And I believe Luxor Cafe, the number 7, who's currently sitting at 14-1, is my pick. He has actually raced on an off track 4 times in Japan, has won 3 and lost by a neck. He is a stout closer. He has got a rider you've never heard of from Hong Kong, but he's one of the world-class riders. He checks all the boxes. He won his last race by 5 lengths, going away, graded stakes in Japan and Hong Kong. And I think you're going to get a good price. And he's a closer, and I think he'll be closing fastest of all.
How about the post position? Not one that you would avoid there?
No, I mean, the 7's not bad. I mean, I don't think I want to be along the rail. I mean, we know that's a curse and normally on any track, and that's going to be, Citizen Bull, who, by the way, is going to be the controlling speed now that, Rodriguez has been scratched. And, the 21 horse comes into play, and he's kind of like a wise guy horse, Carrera, and he's coming in from the 21 post. He just scratched Rodriguez at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Baeza, how do you say that name?
Yeah, Baeza, you're right.
Baeza, all right.
You mentioned Luxor Cafe is your favorite, and that isn't that a more common path now that we're seeing more and more as these horses coming over from these tracks in Japan and then having success at the Derby?
Yeah, Forever Young, if he didn't get pushed and shoved actually by the jockey, I think he would have won last year's race. I think what you find is, they say they're, the Japanese horses. We got to be careful with that. Horse is bred in Kentucky. He is owned by a Japanese individual. This horse, they're figuring out the trainers in Japan. They want to win the big race here in America. And I think over the past 2 years, they have figured out what they need to do. They're much more competitive than they were 5-6 years ago. And I think this off track is really going to play in favor of Luxor Cafe.
Nick the Railbird joining us. Batavia Downs has their event going on, the Derby Party, $35 Derby deal. Includes $25 free play, a $5 wager on the Derby, a Derby program, and lots of stuff going on there. Drink specials, $5 mint juleps, $3 16-ounce domestic drafts. So lots going on at Batavia Downs, and Brian Koziel will be there. If you want to go more than just the winner, who are we pairing in there? Who are the horses you think are in the mix if we're throwing a 2, 3, or 4-horse bet down?
Yeah, Tistastic, the 14 horse. I think he's got a good shot. He won his last race with Joel Rosario up the Louisiana Derby. I think the number 9 horse, Burnham Square, Brian Hernandez Jr., Ian Wilkes trained. And you got to throw, I think Journalism will hit the board someplace, but my knock on him, he's never left California. These last 3 races, he's only raced against 5 horses, not 20 or 19 other horses. And I think for the first time, to your point earlier, you had a great point. You're going to get mud kicked in your face, in your eyes, and it's a whole different animal, no pun intended, when you run on an off track.
When you say the favorite you think will get on the board, is it just this is definitely the most talented horse, just maybe not the great conditions?
Yeah, he's the most talented. He's got the best speed figures. But, he hasn't had a lot of traffic. I mean, he's run against 4 other opponents in his last, 3 starts, where you're going to have 19 other horses in this race, and then you have to navigate through traffic. And I just think that, again, a lot of this is going to depend on the jockeys, where the horses sit. And you don't want to be too far behind, but you also want to be able – and he's never been on an off track. So you throw all those things in. We know that famous line, the best team doesn't always win, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Horses.
All right. So we like Luxor Cafe to win. We like the 9, the 14.
And the 8.
And the 8.
All right. Do you have any? We've kind of adopted Owen Almighty as our morning show host because of our Owen Parker here. Do you have any thoughts on the 20 horse?
Would be a complete surprise. I'd be candid with you, but hey, listen. Your opinion is the one that counts. But anything can happen. Remember Rich Strike a couple years ago.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Nick.
Anytime, guys. All looking right. Forward to speaking again.
All right, Nick the Railbird on the Derby again. Special edition of Sports Talk Saturday after Sports Talk Saturday. It'll be from 2 to 5. At Batavia Downs and the 151st Kentucky Derby Superfecta specials. What's your flavor? What kind of bet? Superfecta, Exacta box, Trifecta box.
I'm still like not always 100% clear on what all those are, so I usually just bet the favorite.
Okay.
Or not bet the favorite, bet the winner.
I can tell you. I can tell you what all this means and how it works. Well, what's the question?
What's an exacto? I know is that's the exact order
an exacto
in which they're going to come in.
Yeah, so yeah. I'll just do this in the FanDuel app. An exact is you're picking who finishes first and second.
Right.
To box that means you get all the horses that you pick in any combination of first and second.
Right.
This is actually where when you learned in math class, I don't even remember computations or permutations and all that, where they would put the boxes up.
Yeah.
So if you have six horses in an exacta box, that's 6 times 5. That's 30 combinations of first and second.
Right.
So that's how it costs you on a $2 bet, advance that way. A trifecta box is the same way. You can pick three horses and box them in any order of the three. Mm-hmm. Four horses is any order, 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
You can do 10 horses. Right. You're paying a lot, but you're only winning on the one bet that you hit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that works. So what I like to do is bet on the favorite Luxor Cafe. If you want to bet, you want to bet $20 on Luxor Cafe, you could do that. The other thing you could do is you could do Luxor Cafe boxed with, everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then if Luxor Cafe finishes first or second, you win. And if he finishes first or second with a long shot in there, well, then that pays big.
Right.
So that's one way to do it. Like a 50-1 wins and your favorite horse, Luxor Cafe, finishes second. All of a sudden, that's 50 times 14
right.
is your bet. So
right.
that's a way to bet horses that are not exactly long shots that can, up your pay. It's the fun thing about the Derbies. You can have a $3 bet win $20,000 in the right. if you bet the right one.
Yeah.
You hit that superfecta sometimes. If it's a little bit like quick pick. All right, fine. I got a 20-1, a 50-1, a 14-1, and a 7-1. Like, that's going to pay.
Mm-hmm.
But again, hitting that is tough. Derby day. Good times. All right, $35 derby deal at Batavia Downs. $5 mint juleps, including a commemorative glass. Am I going to go out and buy stuff to make mint juleps this weekend? Probably not.
Do it. By the way, Brian will be on live from Batavia Downs again. Reminder, tomorrow, two to five. For the mint julep, you'll need...
If I remember correctly,
you need simple syrup. You need,
yes. You need simple syrup.
Yeah.
You're going to need mint to muddle.
Obviously.
Yep. Yeah. And bourbon.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kentucky bourbon and simple syrup, which is not hard to make. You can just make that in a pot on your stove.
Yeah.
With sugar. 8 mint leaves, simple syrup, bourbon, and a mint sprig.
Okay. Love it.
Bourbon and mint.
It's good.
And sugar. I mean, yeah. Don't drink too many. Be careful.
Especially with the sugar. Yeah, no.
Yeah, they can hit like a truck. All right. Extendo Sports coming up. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
All right, what next?
19 years ago today, Sabres playoffs.
Yeah.
Game 6 win 7-1 over the Flyers.
That was a fun one. In Philly, blow them out. Derek Roy hat trick?
Derek Roy hat trick is not correct.
Okay.
Derek Roy scored one goal. He had 4 points.
Okay. Yes. Derek Roy, 4 points. I don't think
it went Greer, Kotalik, Roy, Pominville, Afeniganov, Drury.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good.
Fun memories.
Yes, indeed. Derby day. I'm ready. Give me my
Derby
Luxor
day.
Cafe.
Hey, great sports weekend then, because you got Derby day and you just got a bunch of game sevens.
Yeah.
On both sides, which is always great. Best game seven is probably, I think on the NBA side it's Nuggets Clippers, but I'm a Nuggets fan, so it's bias.
There's one NHL game tonight, Jets Blues, to see if the Blues can force game seven.
That would be another one on Sunday if they win.
And then Saturday, Avalanche Stars game seven.
That's going to be great.
Sunday, Blues Jets game seven, if it gets there.
Yep.
Not bad.
Yeah. And it'll be raining all weekend, so.
Oof. dodge the raindrops, try to play some golf. Try.
Yep. You know, one sacrifice of Liverpool already winning the championship is also that the Premier League schedule is like just basically
toast.
Although there might be a Champions League race, right?
Is there?
Yeah, Man City leading Forest and Chelsea by one. All right, that's pretty good, actually. And then Villa, three back.
Yep. Meanwhile, the relegation...
And then everyone would love to see Manchester City just not be in Champions League next year.
That'd be great. Relegation race is over.
The relegation race?
Yep.
Okay, it's over. So that even that's not...
There's a 15-point gap between 17 and 18.
Oh, yeah.
That's so it's over.
So that means Leicester City is one of the teams going down. 9 years ago today, they clinched the title at plus 500,000 odds.
Yeah.
Plus 500,000. What would I need to get to plus 500,000? Sabres to win the Cup and Bills to win the Super Bowl next year. Would that even be close? If I parlayed that.
No, probably not.
Not even close?
The league below, we know that Ipswich, Leicester, and Southampton are going down.
Mm-hmm.
I know Leeds is coming up, and Burnley is coming up, it appears. And then they do have a playoff, don't they? Where 3-6, someone in there wins it. Sheffield, Sunderland, Bristol City, and Coventry City. And Millwall's right on the outside. So is Blackburn Rovers and Middlesbrough. They got a big race there. But Leeds and Burnley appear to be safe. All right. Thanks, everybody, for calling, texting, tweeting, listening, sharing, commenting, chatting.
What a week.
What a week. It's gonna be a heck of a next couple of months.
Yes.
As we, you know, hey, whatever. Joe, it's been a great run.
Maybe we'll get some Sabres news next week.
Maybe. Maybe the Amherst win the Calder Cup. And for the Bills. Cool. For the Bills, the next step is the schedule, really. Like 12 days from the schedule, which will be fun. And, you know, leaks along the way and announcements along the way. We're back Monday morning. Cheers. Have a great weekend.